Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Richard Sale, who's been reporting on intelligence since the late 1970s. He was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize and is the author of Clinton's Secret Wars. Richard Sale has written for the Washington Post and the San Francisco Examiner and served as a special correspondent for UPI for 5 years. He's the author of Traitors and the Blackstone Rangers and is currently intelligence correspondent for the Middle East Times. Welcome to Background Briefing, Richard Sale.
Well, it's nice to talk with you.
And there's a war going on under the radar, a cyber war, in the Middle East. There was an attack on Saudi Aramco on August the 15th, a cyber attack. And on August the 29th, there was an attack against Qatar's RasGas with a malware known as Shamoon, which is allegedly designed by the Iranians, which they have deployed in response to a malware called Wiper that was used against the Iranian oil industry earlier this spring. So we have this kind of asymmetrical warfare going on under the radar, which is also another example of the blowback or boomerang effect, right?
Well, I would just say that the real heavyweights of this kind of cyber offensive are the three major software companies in the United States. There's a guy named Brin at Google, and there's a guy named Ballmer at Microsoft, and Ellison at Oracle. And they've been working with Israel's top cyber warriors to come up with this new version of Stuxnet, which can damage Iran's entire software networks. And they're working very hard at it.
So the Stuxnet, and there's another one called Dooku, right?
Yeah, oh yes. Dooku was its mission was to reconnoiter. It was to patiently collect data. It was not a strike weapon.
I see. So let's go back then to the big attack, which was Stuxnet. And my understanding is that it was incredibly sophisticated, and it was very, very patiently infecting the Iranian nuclear program and collecting a lot of data. And it actually barely got started, or at least it didn't do as much damage as it was planned. But wasn't it detected by American antivirus people? In other words, the Iranians didn't detect it first, did they?
No, they did not.
So tell us that story, because it's pretty amazing.
Well, I think I've talked to a lot of intelligence officials, and it appears that the infection of the Iranian centrifuges was not gradual. Israel used agents from MEK, which was a dissident Iranian organization. They had people on the ground in Iran, and they used an old trick called a memory stick. A memory stick can be used, you can drop it in a men's room or leave it in a parking lot, and somebody will pick it up and plug it in. But in this case, somebody left it somewhere where it could be plugged in, and the infection, the rate of infection was much greater as a result.
So it happened pretty quickly then. And
yes.
But surely the Iranian technicians must have noticed these centrifuges exploding in these cascades. You know, they spin at a little under 100,000 RPM.
No, so the virus was subtle enough that it disabled any reporting mechanism. So an Iranian technician looking at his centrifuge, he would be told that it was functioning perfectly when, in fact, it was going nuts.
I see.
That was part of the sophistication of the virus.
So tell us, Richard Sale, about how it was accidentally detected on our side, if you will, and it wasn't the Iranians who figured it out first.
No, it was a U.S. Security firm that first was aware of it. And the knowledge spread among U.S. officials, actually. I think Iran was very late coming to that party.
Well, that doesn't sound like the intelligence people really, you know, did their homework on this, surely.
I don't think it was designed to work invisibly and quietly and to be disguised in its effects. And in that way, it achieved a lot of success.
But they weren't apparently able to stop the detection by others and keep it quiet.
Well, I mean, by the time it was discovered, it damaged, I think, over 2,000 centrifuges. And it was a warning because it was clear that we had a new version in the works, and we would use it if we had to take down, derail any intention by Iran to really produce a weapon.
Again, I'm speaking with Richard Sale, who's been reporting on intelligence since the late 1970s. He was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize and the author of Clinton's Secret Wars. He has been a special correspondent for UPI for 5 years and is currently intelligence correspondent for the Middle East Times. And we're talking about cyber warfare going on in the Gulf largely between the Saudis and the Iranians, as well as between Iran and the U.S. and Israel, deploying malicious computer codes known as malware. So my understanding, though, in terms of blowback, in as much as the Iranians have deployed this malware called Shamoon that's been attacking the Saudis' oil, I think, didn't Aramco's website suddenly had a burning American flag on it? Is that...
Yes, yeah. I don't know who was behind that. It very well could be Iran. I mean, they are very much a part, an opponent in this game. But nobody's really named the agent there.
Well, that's the whole nature of this warfare, isn't it? You have clean hands.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's always plausible deniability. That's part of the magic of it. But there are dimensions of this that are really, truly alarming. I mean, for example, we have a $5 billion surveillance program worldwide. Most of the members of this are members of the European Union. And they do everything from censor emails to keep track of the internet and to do, telephone surveillance. They also sell platforms for Trojans and other technology to disable servers and spread infection in a computer network. One of the experts I talked to said, you know, as long as you have porous technology and badly constructed networks, there will always be a way in. And people apparently have found it.
So isn't there, though, in terms of blowback and the boomerang effect, my understanding is that Stuxnet and the other one, Dooku, and all of these, this malware, leaves a signature traces, which then you can turn around and use against the enemy. In other words, it would be like if you sent your latest bomber to bomb Iran, and the bomber landed in Iran, and the Iranians were able to use it and send it back our way with bombs.
Well, they're just not as good at it. I mean, that's the main thing.
But it does leave traces, doesn't it?
Sometimes it does, yeah.
I see.
But it's very subtle, and it's very hard to counter, especially, you know, we had a huge Chinese-launched operation called Operation Shady Rat, and it took an enormous amount of intellectual property. And it didn't steal any money, but it stole all sorts of essential information from corporations and U.S. government agencies. And it was the theft of intellectual property is very dangerous because the Chinese were raiding law firms, patent law firms, which is like one-stop shopping. I mean, you go there once and you get everything you need, and you can clear out without leaving any trace.
Well, my understanding is that this Chinese cyber attack also got into very secure Pentagon computers, and didn't it get into to the Department of Energy's nuclear weapons labs as well?
Yes. And yeah, I mean, that, as I say, there are all sorts of ways to do this. I know that somebody used a memory stick to compromise a very highly classified CENTCOM site. So, I mean, when you use this stuff, I mean, one guy said to me, it's like biological warfare. It can come around and it can come back and bite you in the ass.
Mm-hmm. Well, apparently the Chinese got the latest nuclear weapons design from the United States.
Well, that's what they claim. I don't know if that's really true. I mean,
Well, the U.S. claims it, at least, you know.
Okay.
So,
and I just...
So, I mean,
I thought they did. Actually, I think you're right. I think that somebody, an employee of the U.S. government, gave the Chinese the latest design for our warhead.
They did, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I remember that.
So what is then, if we know from that there's this cyber warfare going on under the radar in the Gulf, largely between the Saudis and the Iranians and the Israelis and the Americans and the Iranians.
Yes.
You mentioned China. Where else is it going on? Russia's been a big player in this too, haven't they?
Well, Russia actually, I don't think they've spent the money on technology that the Chinese have, actually. The Russians were very good in the early 1990s. They were looting U.S. banks using hundreds of millions of dollars every year. And it took a long time for the U.S. to sort of muster up the nerve and intellectual expertise to counter that.
So how much did they steal? We don't know.
We don't. I mean, the other...
And by the way, who stole the money? Was it the KGB or criminals or a combination of both?
Probably the KGB and the U.S., rather the Russian military intelligence, the GRU. They were pretty adept at it, and the Russians put a lot of money into it. But nobody would talk about it. There was only one company in the United States, Citigroup, actually talked about, losing billions of dollars. But the immediate reaction of U.S. companies is to clam up. They're very, very, they have a phobia about prestige or any publicity. They want to retain their prestige, and they are absolutely horrified at anything being known. And they're also not very energetic in mounting any counter-response.
Again, I'm speaking with Richard Sale, who's been reporting on intelligence since the 1970s. He was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize and the author of Clinton's Secret Wars. And he was a correspondent for UPI for 5 years and is currently intelligence correspondent for the Middle East Times. So when you say that the Russians, or the KGB and the GRU, stole billions from U.S. banks back in the 90s,
yeah.
My understanding is that on the U.S. side, they used electronic or cyber warfare to go after Milosevic, who'd stolen the entire Yugoslav treasury and I believe parked it in Cyprus and other places. So
that was a superb operation, actually.
Tell us about it. Yeah.
It was called Elephant Blanket. It was an enormous targeting exercise. They actually knew everybody in the Milosevic hierarchy, what they owned, what they sold, what their business interests were, how often they talked to each other, what was their ranking in the Milosevic hierarchy. And so the U.S. mounted a full spectrum information warfare plan. It was called Elephant Blanket because it worked with a series of diagrams and an enormous 5-foot square piece of paper. And all of it was meticulously printed in 6-point type. And it was really subtle because for the first time, I think we had special technical operations cells, which were a super secret covert effort by the U.S. military. And they really did all sorts of... They worked with espionage, psychological warfare, propaganda, information warfare. They used them all together, and it was devastating.
So they have this ability then. I mean, the world is full of criminals and despots who steal the national treasuries. Recently, there was a report on how much money is hidden abroad by kleptocrats and criminals and wealthy Americans like Mitt Romney and others. The figure that was given was $21 trillion. It could be as high as $32 trillion, the report indicated. So is that money being tracked? I mean, it seems like the NSA know who's...
Well, I think the cyber warfare people are trying to track it. This Gauss virus recently, it targeted nothing but Lebanese banks. And the whole effort was to not, they didn't steal any money, but they wanted to monitor all the dispersions in different banking operations. I think they were very much keeping a scrutiny on Hezbollah and its operations.
Well, presumably they're doing the same against Assad, right? They're trying to starve him. So his money is probably being, is it being electronically disappeared or confiscated?
I don't think they've stolen it. I just think that they have a bead on it, We're very patient about this. I don't think we'd outright steal it. I think, but we could freeze it, and we could disrupt it, and we haven't, so far as I know, we haven't.
Well, I just recall during Iran-Contra that Oliver North's secretary, Fawn Hall, mistyped in some Swiss bank account numbers with money that the Saudis had sent that was supposed to be sent to the Contras, and she mistyped the number, and somebody else got the $10 million. So
no, that's very funny.
Yeah. So
certainly, I would think most of Iran's clerics, many of them, really do have Swiss bank accounts, and I'm sure that we keep track of those.
Right.
I don't think we pilfer. In a case of war, I'm sure those funds would disappear or be compromised.
Right.
But so far we haven't done that.
So are there any countermeasures? In other words, this, when you say, Richard Sale, that cyber warfare is a bit like biological warfare, where,
yes,
you know, if the wind changes, you get the germs instead of the other guy.
Yes.
That seems like a pretty reckless threshold to cross, and we're clearly crossing it. I believe that we're even using it in Afghanistan against the Taliban, albeit on a lower level than the attacks on Iran. Presumably, there's a new version of Stuxnet that's being deployed as we speak, you know. When are we going to start waking up here? Because our systems are so much more sophisticated and therefore more vulnerable, aren't they?
Well, in the case of the Taliban, we had a jamming system that was really effective because the Taliban had this enormous network of radio frequencies, and they would announce to officials in Pakistan that they wanted to be killed. And a lot of people were killed as a result of those broadcasts. So the U.S. mounted a jamming effort using all sorts of aircraft and ground jammers, everything we had. And it really disrupted the whole network. As far as countermeasures, I just don't think corporations really don't have any sense of urgency about this.
Well, if the Citibanks and the big U.S. banks lost hundreds of millions of dollars in the 1990s, you'd think that would have got their attention.
Well, you would hope so. But, I mean, the Lieberman-Collins bill. It's the Cyber Warfare Modified Act for 2012. And all of the stuff in it is the whole program is based on a fear of companies for additional regulation. I mean, they don't even have a clear definition of what infrastructure is and how it can be placed in hazard by cyber efforts, cyber warfare. The whole thing just sounds like a complete muddle. And I don't think you're going to get any sort of united or forceful action by U.S. corporations and industry. It's just not there.
Well, just in closing, Richard Sale, you mentioned that some of the top internet mega billionaires,
yeah,
from Google, Sergey Brin and Larry Ellison,
yeah,
from Oracle, and Steve Ballmer from Microsoft,
yes,
presume they head up this. They're working with the intelligence community. What do you know about what kind of an operation? You know, Larry Ellison's off sailing his yachts most of the time and playing tennis, so I'm surprised that he's devoting a lot of time to this.
Well, I mean, I don't, you know, I take it at face value that they're heading this, but clearly it's their experts in the field that are really mounting the effort and doing the work and perfecting the designs.
So this is a kind of government private industry cooperative.
Yeah.
The very thing that the Romney Ryan campaigns are against.
Yeah, exactly. But it's working very well.
I see. Well, just in closing then, when do you think somebody's going to really come back, something's going to come back and bite us, if it hasn't already happened?
Well, with the Operation Shady Rats, I mean, we lost trillions and trillions of dollars. And again, the corporate response was weak and disorganized and ineffective. So the Chinese are getting very, very good at this, and we're good at it. God knows, I really don't know how many banks abroad we loot. I mean, I just don't have that kind of information. But it's a very complicated and dangerous situation. And again, I think the example of biological warfare really holds in this case. It's very dangerous. It can come back and get you.
Well, Richard Sale, I thank you so much for joining us here.
No, thank you for it. It's been a joy to talk to you. Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Richard Sale, who's been reporting on intelligence since the 1970s. He was a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize and the author of Clinton's Secret Wars. Richard Sale has written for the Washington Post and the San Francisco Examiner and served as a special correspondent for UPI for 5 years. He's the author of Traitors and Blackstone Rangers and is currently intelligence correspondent for the Middle East Times. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.